Chart Chat Technorama for Wednesday, July 6th, 2005.
This show is a proud member of
the TechPodcast.com network.
Find out more about this and other shows at
www.techpodcast.com.
TechPodcast.com.
If it's tech, it's here.
Quiet, numbskulls, I'm broadcasting.
Unilateral phase detractors. Cardinal gram meters. Six hygroscopic Marvel veins. Conductors and fluxes. Prefamulated annulite. Malleable logarithmic casing. Swerving bearings. Panometric fan. Milford trunnions. Ambifacient lunar wing shaft. Lotus O deltoid type. Semi-boloid slots of the stator. Drawn reciprocation dingle arm. Sinusoidal deplaneration. Retroincabulator.
Hey, 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 everybody. Make sure my mic is up. Here we go.
Wake up, Chuck.
Welcome to another episode of Chuck Chat Technorama. I am your host, Chuck Tomasi. My monitor volume's down a little, that's all. It's probably everything's way too loud now. With me, as always, is Craig Stepp for show number 20. That's a funny last name.
Imagine trying to spell it on the phone to other people.
How are you tonight?
I'm doing good, man. How about yourself?
I'm fine. And to the wonderful listener sitting there in the invisible chair across the table from me with the headphones in their ear, yes, you can pretend you're in the studio with the virtual studio that spans from Wisconsin to North Carolina to your ears. We bring it to you all through the magic of podcasting.
Technorama, stick it in your ear.
We come up with more catch lines that just don't work.
Yeah, we're fishing.
Keeping busy, Craig?
Oh, yeah. Actually, I got a Fedora Core 4 on my laptop. I kind of like it. Have you messed with it at all?
I haven't had a chance to do that yet.
Well, you know, something it was a little confusing to me yesterday. I was playing around. I was browsing with it, sitting down on the couch downstairs, and as I was moving my finger on the touchpad, I was like, why is this thing going up and down? The page would jump up and down while I was just trying to move the mouse to the one side or the other. It turns out, I didn't realize this, but the touchpad in Fedora Core 4 has a feature turned on where the side of the touchpad does the scrolling up and down. You know, like some of the Windows drivers will allow you to do.
Oh, yeah.
And if on the bottom of the touchpad, if I go back and forth, it'll do forward and back motions in the, you know, for the browser. If I go right or left on the bottom of the touchpad.
Oh, sure. That's a neat feature. I like that.
Well, I do too, but I was like, man, this thing's screwed up. I was having cold feet about my Fedora Core 4 there for a little bit. I happened to catch that today, so yeah, that's pretty interesting now that I know.
In this episode, we will be covering my first few days working with WordPress as we convert the Chuck Chat website over, and Craig will be giving his second installment of Step by Step to make his digital picture frame.
Yep.
Shall we get in with the news?
Let's do it.
All right, I'm going to print it out again. Oh, impact printers. You got to love them.
Rip it off the printer.
I don't have any perf paper anymore. I used to have stacks of it.
Chuck, it's the magic of radio. Just take a piece of paper and rip it.
Well, let's see. That's a donation. I can't rip that up. I already pledged that money. Here, a month-old show notes. There.
There you go.
Could have done that with a Foley artist.
Oh, yeah.
Ah, smooth. Paper cut.
Technorama, running like a top.
You know, somebody somewhere is going to get ambitious and make a bunch of clips of those, and they're just going to stack them up for us one day.
We'll leave it for our best of show.
Yeah, best of. It's just 20 minutes of Technorama ripping the scab off of Geek News.
20 minutes. I was thinking more like 5.
Give us some credit.
I know.
Did you hear about the boy who was stabbed as he was getting on a subway with his friends to go see some fireworks or something? He was stabbed, and the gang of boys stole his stuff, which included an iPod.
I did hear about that. That's horrible. I can't believe that.
Well, the interesting twist to this is that, was it yesterday, Monday? Steve mm-hmm. Jobs called the father, and the father had no idea who it was at first.
Mm-hmm.
And he called him up and said, look, if there's anything you need, his father was, typically angry and bitter, and then Steve called and kind of smoothed it over and calmed him down a bit, and it was a very nice thing to do. I mean, Steve didn't have to do that, but...
No, he didn't.
I mean, nice guy.
That is pretty cool.
The more I learn about Steve, there was that article you had sent me also about the commencement speech he made.
Oh, yeah, to... was it Stanford or one of those schools like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and basically, my first thought was, he dropped out of college. What kind of commencement speech is this going to make?
Yeah. I dropped out.
But
yeah,
he had a lot of good advice about make every day count. Your time is short. Do what you want to do, and if you're not doing it, move on and find something that you do want to do. So make sure you stay in love with what you're doing, and it doesn't mean being married to the same job. I just kind of took a rabbit trail from the Steve Jobs calling the family of the teen thing, but just the more I hear about this guy, the more I like him.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and, at first, and with everything on the internet, you kind of take it with a grain of salt now, and at first I was like, I hope this isn't, let's put Apple in a better light type thing, but after reading it, I really got the impression that it was genuine. So, I felt pretty good about that. It's all right.
Think you'll give us an interview?
No.
You'd be surprised who I'm working on talking to.
something about Snowball, Chance, somewhere.
Blast Furnace, Haiti, something. I don't know. Now, you have a news story here also.
Yeah, this one I was kind of excited about. The European Parliament voted down from 648 to 14 with 18 abstentions to vote out the law they had to make software patents legal in Europe. And I was kind of excited about that because the EU lawmaker stated that the software patents could limit innovation and cause difficulties for businesses, and that human knowledge cannot be patented. Now, I've heard that before, so mm-hmm. I know somebody had been lobbying these guys to not do this, and I know it was all over the place. Remember about a year or so ago, I guess, when they started talking about doing this, all the, especially open source projects like Nopix and all that, their front page was like, please lobby these guys against the software patents. They won't work and they'll stifle, development. And so here you go. They did away with it and they don't have any plans to reintroduce a new bill. So I think this is good.
Does that go for all software? I mean, how does it deal with intellectual property that companies come up with?
No, intellectual property is different. They're talking about software patents such as the Amazon's one-click purchase thing, things like that.
But if there's a proprietary chunk of code behind it, doesn't that protect them?
I think if you're talking about, I'm a lawyer, but I mean, if you're talking about IP as in... I guess how something is done. To be honest with you, I'm not really sure on that.
Maybe we have a kind listener out there who can shed some light on this, because I'm a little gray on where this EU thing ends and where intellectual property begins. And before I can form an opinion, I want to make sure I know the lines of demarcation a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Please, if you have information, send us email, chalk@chalkchat.com or keyboardmonkey@gmail.com, or stop by the ever-changing website, www.chuckchat.com.
Hi, this is Tim from Winecast, and when I want to get in touch with my inner geek, I go to Chuck Chat Technorama. 101, guys.
Uh-oh, I think I had the mic out for that one. I'm not sure where the mute was, but hey, if you heard me babbling in the background, well, that's the life.
It's no different than normal.
Watch TV. I'm going to do a podcast. Yeah, God, it's 8:30 is podcast time.
And I like Impalupas.
Definitely podcast. Now, you have a tip. A tip for the listener.
Yes, I do. Normally, you know, when geeks get together and they share stories about working on other people's computers or answering other people's questions, you know, usually it involves, between the geeks, of course, man, I can't believe they did this or that or installed this or that. But I have to say, my wife brought this computer home from one of her friends. The computer apparently is dead. I haven't really looked at it very much, very closely myself. They'd already purchased a new one. But they wanted me to look at it and make sure that I can wipe the hard drive for them before they did something with it. Now, that is excellent advice to anybody, you know, because there was a study where some students, college students, had purchased a bunch of hard drives off of eBay and recovered data off of them, or some of them they didn't have to. And there was credit card numbers, social security numbers, so on and so forth, all over those hard drives.
Right.
So if you ever get rid of even your hard, just the hard drive, always low level that thing. You know, like with, I've used Disk Zapper.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's DiskZapper.com or something like that. It's just an ISO. It's Linux. You install it on the disk, boot up on it, and it says type erase to erase, and it writes zeros and whatnot out to the drive a few times and does a really good job. There's some other software, too, we can put links to. But I thought that was a really good thing that the average user had actually asked to have their drive wiped before they did something with it.
That is amazing, because usually you hear about companies who have to do this, particularly government agencies.
Mm-hmm.
But for you know, a relative person, you know, close to you that doesn't have that much tech savvy, or maybe, I don't know, does she work for the government?
Maybe she's testing me. But
yeah, that's...
Oh, no, I thought it was pretty good. Maybe people are getting more enlightened as time goes on, I hope. Maybe. They still open attachments, so I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Hi, this is Cody from the Vinyl Podcast, and you're listening to Chuck Tomasi on ChuckChat.com.
But we press on regardless.
That's right.
That's actually the name of a race, a rally race, the POR, Press On Regardless. Useless facts from the head of Chuck.
Moving right along.
Moving right along. We've got our main stories, as I promised, a review of WordPress. You can find WordPress. WordPress is a blogging software package that has plugins and extensions and things to handle RSS feeds, enclosures for podcasts, that sort of thing. It's a very adaptable package from what I've seen so far. Easy to set up. You can find it at www.wordpress.org. It's free. Very good community following it. The download was easy. Click, click, click. It's PHP and MySQL based. So the database on the back end is MySQL or MySQL. Which is the preferred? I can't remember. I just read it recently, too.
What, MySQL?
Is it MySQL or people say MySQL? I think it's MySQL now that I think about it.
I've been saying MySQL, but I don't know.
Another chance for a listener to come in and fix us.
Hey, tomato, tomato, Tomasi, what does it matter?
Yeah, that sounds like a geek thought to me.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The installation, you do need to have MySQL. We'll go with that for now. You have to have the server and the database set up prior to installation. That involves a simple command, MySQL admin create blah blah blah. So you gotta have the ability to do that. If you don't have command line interface, somebody's usually got MyPHP. What is it? MyPHP admin.
Yeah, PHP my admin.
That's it. See, I use it all the time. I'm a command line guy. You basically download it, untar it, or unzip it, and run the installer from the web interface. It's that simple. As soon as you say, "Hey, show me my web page," it says, "Well, I'm going to create you a config.php. It asks you the DB questions. Where did you stick it? Which is usually localhost. what's the database name? Do you want any table prefixes on this? Because you can run multiple blogs out of the same database. You don't need a new database for every blog that you set up. And the way I've got it configured, or the way I would like to ultimately get it configured, is one database, one blog with multiple categories, and then feed the blogs or podcasts out of those categories, which shouldn't be too difficult.
No.
After getting the core, there's lots of themes, which is basically the styles or the skins you can put on this thing. I went to alexking.org, which was one of the ones pointed to on the WordPress.org site. Looked at every single one of them. They've got a very easy way. You go through a select list, say, show me that one, show me that one, show me that one. I was looking for certain parameters that I needed to hit. Three columns, two on the side, yada, 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 banner graphic, the whole thing. They've got something like 126 themes that you can look through, and I found two or three that were attractive, things I thought I could model a core on. I got the core theme working, but I still need to tweak it a bit. Craig is helping me with some of the graphics. We're going back and forth with some ideas. Working very well there. Publishing articles, very easy, very nice. I do like having the ability to save as draft, particularly for putting together show notes. You can type them up ahead of time, then when we're ready to release them, they'll be there waiting for us, and just hit submit. Right now, I'm kind of doing it in a web browser, but if I put the web browser away, I lose my show notes. It's not real fun. So the code I'm using right now is all handwritten, and a lot of these features would be really nice to have, but I just don't have the time anymore to program them all up. And the technology keeps changing. So the ultimate goal is to stop spending so much time trying to write extensions and tweak the RSS feed tag and put in another feature to do podcasts, and who knows what's coming in the next 3-6 months. It'll already be taken care of, and if it's not, I could always contribute back to the cause. So I like the fact that there's add-ons and scripts, so I can still get my daily dose of programming if I have to, and it's fully compliant with all the web standards, which is really attractive. I don't have to think, oh, is this going to work in IE6? Oh, is this going to work in Safari? How's this going to look in Firefox? It's all taken care of on the back end. Those are already dealt with. So there was one post footer, whatever you want to call it, a postscript to this after I'd written up the skeleton of this article. There was a security alert a couple of days ago on WordPress and many other blog software, including Nukem. I don't know if Mambo was
PHP included. Nuke and all those others.
That's it. There's like a dozen of them out there. All the popular ones, including Movable Type, that was an XML RPC security breach. And we'll post a link to the news article if you want to review that, see if you're vulnerable. The workaround for WordPress, thank you, Craig, for giving this to me, was to simply rename the xmlrpc.php file, which I don't think I'm using at the moment anyway. We're still in sandbox mode.
No, actually, you know what that's used for?
What is that used for?
Like, for example, under Linux, there's a program called, I think it's Blogit or GTK Blog or something like that. Mm-hmm. So you can actually write articles in this application on your desktop, and it'll post it to your blog for you.
Oh, okay.
And you can do stuff like from Flickr. You can tell it to go use that XML RPC. It's remote procedure control, so it'll... You can feed it a username and password and instructions and have it post stuff for you automatically.
Instead of using HTTP requests?
Yeah, you would. For example, you would go to Flickr, and there's a thing where you can say blog this to your... I forget the actual name of it, but you can have a picture and everything and tell it to submit it to your blog, mm-hmm. and give that information ahead of time. It will talk to that XML RPC on your site and post an article for you.
I like it. We'll give you more updates as we get further along in the project, but for now, we're basically tweaking styles and going to flesh out content soon.
Technology is a wonderful thing when it works, and when it doesn't, you get Chuck Chat.
And now, Craig, take us into segment 2 of step-by-step building the digital picture frame.
Yes. Okay. As promised, here you go. Here's step number 2. there's two things that, or there's two questions, there's a question you have to ask yourself, what OS you want to go with. With a digital picture frame, of course, there's Windows and Linux, and there's probably several others, but we'll go with those right now. With Windows, you have these options, if you so choose. Not only do you get the picture frame, but you can also install iTunes on your Windows picture frame, so you can wirelessly share your music, you know, and play it. So, like, if you set it up in your living room and you put iTunes on it, mm-hmm. and on your main PC you share your music library, you can play them from that frame. You know, so you don't have to actually have a computer sticking out like a sore thumb to play music. That's one option for it. It would be better with a touch screen, of course, but maybe you can figure out something with that. And for Windows, all you need is a screensaver that rotates the pictures in a directory. With Windows XP, there's already one in there. You just tell it what directory to pull up.
Hmm.
So that's basically all you really need to do is install XP on a laptop, and you're done. You can get by with Windows 98, but you'd have to set up a program to actually, you know, do the screensaver part. Now, in Linux, it's a little bit more difficult, but the remote administration is very easy, especially if you do install a wireless card, which is what I was assuming in my Windows example.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily get in there and administrate it. It's very scriptical.
Scriptical, there's a new word.
I like it. Scriptable and flexible, you know, so you can really do whatever you want with the Linux box.
Quick, get out there. Registered in Wikipedia.
Yeah, let me go ahead. Now, for Linux, of course, you don't have to install a whole GUI to do this. So, really, the requirements would be a little lower on the Linux part. You don't have to install GNOME and all that. There's some software you can view the pictures from the command line, and it'll resize them, and you can do the whole thing with that.
Really? I would have thought you would have had to install the GUI.
No, what was that? I'm trying to remember. There was a program... what the name of the program is, I can look it up afterwards, but it'll view a picture, it'll change the mode, the video mode,
mm-hmm.
and display a picture and hop back out. I think it only do like, you have to tell it what resolution to go to, and so you can, if you have an older laptop that only does like 640 by 480, I mean like really old, you know, you can do that, or you can do all from the command line.
Hey, 640 by 480 was hot stuff 15 years ago.
Yeah, wasn't it? Look at those flowers. Wow.
I seem to remember a discussion like that not too long ago.
Yeah, I'm having flashbacks. So basically, here's the steps that we're going to go through. One, install your OS of choice. Two, disable all the power management and the BIOS and the OS.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you don't want it...
Going to sleep.
Going to sleep in the middle. Hey, that's a cool picture. Whoa. So be sure to disable all the power management you can in the BIOS and the OS. Number three, install everything and make it work just like you want it before you start taking the thing apart. And that means, you know, looking at it just like a regular laptop, it should do everything, you know, start showing pictures and everything just like you want.
Mm-hmm.
Four, after you've done all that, disable the keyboard and mouse if applicable. Sometimes you don't have to turn off or disable a mouse in the BIOS, but disable the keyboard requirement in the BIOS.
Okay.
Now, we're going to disassemble the laptop, strip it down to the motherboard and the screen. Now, be careful with the screen because it is easy to damage the things when you're taking it out of the you know, casing.
Mm-hmm.
Once we do that, this is how we're going to set it up. You're going to take the motherboard and basically where the keyboard was on your laptop, instead of the screen folding down, you're going to have the screen on top of where the keyboard was at, but facing out.
Okay.
You follow me?
Yep.
So when you put the frame on it, you know, the back of the computer is, of course, facing the back, and the screen's facing through your mat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what you're going to do is you're going to set up, once you take all this apart, you're going to set the screen down on top of it and kind of assess the thickness of what you've got. So when you go buy a frame, like a shadow box, you know how deep you need it.
Okay.
And then after you got that, then just mount the thing with the hard drive and the power supply inside the frame, and voila. So by next Sunday, this is what I'm going to have done. I'm going to install the OS. I'll disassemble it and have a frame ready. And then by the third installment, will have assembly instructions and everything. So we should have it done by then.
And we should have some pictures up on Flickr.
Oh, yeah. So we got, by the way, we have a Flickr account for Technorama, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, and you can subscribe to the feed from that and kind of follow along to what I'm doing as I'm doing it.
We're going to put those system guys to shame.
Yeah. Who?
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and whenever I'm in podcast land, I listen to Chuck Chat.
Okay.
We got a little crazy in the notes here. We've got some listener feedback. We've got an audio clip from Bruce Barr, one of our more vocal listeners, shall we say. He sent me a couple of them. He always seems to, I don't know, I think he listens to about 2 or 3 weeks worth of Chuck Chat, Technorama, and Freestyle, and then blasts all his feedback at once, which is fine with me. I mean, some people are out on the road and they listen to their stuff, or they're stuck in a hotel room and they listen to everything all in once. I know that's the way I listen to I catch up on a lot of podcasts is on travel. Well, let's listen to the old clip first.
Hey, Chuck, it's Bruce again. I know. If he doesn't call once, he calls multiple times a day. Anyway, I forgot about the other thing, which is, as the purveyor of trailing edge technology at trail-edge-tech.blogspot.com, I would be interested in what is that computer that's sitting back there on that shelf that is, I think you said it was in the leather case. Anyway, that was your computer you did your first BBSing on. So I personally would be interested in that. Who knows about your other listeners? Bye.
What is that mystery machine that for those of you who don't listen to Chuck Chat Freestyle, I apologize. I was talking with my daughter and I forgot, somehow the conversation turned to this obscure computer in the way back days that I don't throw out a whole lot of technology, especially the stuff that's working. And this is more of a memento. It's about the size of, well, it's actually smaller than your typical laptop. I'm looking at it next to an IBM T20 or a PowerBook, and it's smaller than that.
So how big is an abacus?
No, it's not an abacus. This is old technology. It's 1983. A company called Convergent Technologies came out with a device called a WorkSlate. I will put a link to this in the show notes so you can see a picture and read a little bit more about it. In effect, the operating system is spreadsheet-based. Now, get this. There are some soft keys just under the screen. It's a whole whopping 46 columns by, 18 rows? Not a real huge thing, but it worked. Had a mini cassette built in, so effectively I could record and play. In fact, here, let's play the intro that they get you used to this thing with. Hopefully I can get this close enough without yanking cords out. I was going to try and grab the patch cord.
You're about to become acquainted with the most versatile business tool you can own. Your WorkSlate. WorkSlate is made up.
Wait a minute. I'm going to see if I can jimmy rig this real quick. It does have an 1/8-inch headphone jack. Let's plug this in and see what we get.
Cover your ears, boys and girls.
Microphone. Earphone. Now let's play. I gotta turn this. Wow, I am really twisting some serious chords here.
Many of the things you use.
There we go!
For example, you use a telephone every day, you might use a calculator, and you probably use a pencil, paper, and a lot of erasers.
You hear that?
Yeah.
That's the tape getting really old. Really old. I'm talking seriously old.
WorkSlate takes all the tools you use every day and puts them in one unique package. Let's take a look at it. The first thing you'll see is the screen. It's a liquid crystal display. You may have noticed that the keyboard is pretty much standard, and right next to it is a numeric pad. In between the keyboard and the numeric pad is a diamond-shaped key called the pointer key.
Now, check this out. All I did was turn it on and put in this tape, and it starts playing. It loads up. The tape is containing both voice and data in different spots. It loads up all the demos and things and walks you through this stuff. What a great concept for a tutorial. I mean, can you imagine walking up to your computer now and turning it on and going, hi, let's get started. I mean, when you see Windows do that, you go, forget it, blow by it and go on with it. But this was very informative because it was such a strange beast, but it was very effective. They walk you through the spreadsheet application. And the keyboard, I'll tell you, the keyboard sucks with a capital S. It makes the IBM PC Junior Chiclet keyboard look like a thing of beauty. This has little round keys, and you have to hit them solidly. The only benefit to this keyboard is if you can type 50 words a minute on this keyboard, you can do about 110 on a normal keyboard. So gosh. I got really fast by typing on this keyboard. It has a built-in 300 baud modem. There's a little, it looks sort of like an RJ45 jack to, hang on, I'm going to plug this back in where it belongs.
Like you still use it?
It has a peripheral port. It came with a little optional dinky, maybe 4x6 inch pen plotter. Little teeny little thing. So you could print spreadsheets and stuff. Color spreadsheets. It wasn't the fastest thing, and it wasn't the... works on AA batteries or AC. It's got some backup batteries, so while you're changing your primaries, you don't lose your data. Built-in modem, the spreadsheet thing. Answering machine, although it didn't record, you could play outbound messages. I said, I'm sorry, we're not home right now, but you can't leave a message either. Don't bother stealing anything because our pet boa constrictor's on the loose. And I think I left one like that. But you could record a phone conversation that was going on. So, You know what? I just had a thought. I might have to resurrect this thing for podcast interviews in case I have to interview somebody and record it. It's the keypad. There's an option to switch the keypad from numeric keypad with 1, 2, 3 across the bottom to phone keypad, 1, 2, 3 across the top. You ever notice that phone keypads and numeric keypads on calculators are different?
Is this tangent section of our show?
This is answering the listener feedback. I liked this machine. It had its flaws, but it also had, it was a pretty cool little machine, and it still works. It's thin, though. I mean, the whole thing is about 3/4 inch thick, and smaller than my PowerBook.
You know what that reminds me of is my Sharp EL5500, the calculator. I had a printer that went with it. It had put like a AA in it, a little thermal printer. It was awesome.
When I saw the Tandy 102, I went, wow, that thing's huge. This is 22 years old now. The default date that came up on it was September 26, 1983. So I have to imagine that was its date of birth.
Yeah, it's born on date.
But we really got off track on that one. We're going to have to wrap it up real soon here. I do have one more plea from Uncle Guido. I forget what relationship we are.
Hello, this is Guido Tomasi. Of course, we're family. And to Tomasi, there's nothing more important than family. We take care of our own. Now you can take care of Chuck by going to Podcast Alley and voting for Chuck Chat Technorama. It'd be a shame if anything happened to that pretty little iPod of yours.
And now, a geek thought.
Geek thoughts.
Matter, antimatter, does it matter?
Wow, where does he come up with these?
Don't know.
Well, we're running a little long, but what else is new? Actually, I'm surprised. I thought we were going to run short, and this is going to be a 20-minute show, the listener wishes.
Yeah, right.
We have one final parting thought before we go. We have our geek library. I came across a link today. Linuxshop.ru. What is that? Romania? Russia? Is RU Russia?
Russia, I think.
Wow. It's a table of equivalence software. I started thinking chemistry in 10th grade when I heard that title. It's a To help you migrate from Windows to Linux, it says if you're using this on Windows, then the equivalent package is this on, you know, if it says if you're using Internet Explorer on Windows, here are some options under Linux. If you're using this sound recording program, here are some options under Linux. Sometimes it's a one-to-one map, like Audacity to Audacity. Other times, it's, oftentimes it's a free equivalent. Sometimes there's a, you know, real cheap registration thing, but they try to stay free. This is a big table of software. I was shocked. I thought, oh, maybe it's about, you know, a dozen categories. This thing's got like 50 rows to it of different categories and different packages, and it's incredible. And it's growing all the time. So I'm going to keep a bookmark to this in case anybody goes, what can I run on Linux? So I thought this was pretty good.
What can't you run on Linux?
Well, I can name a few things, but we'll stay away from them. I'm out of show notes. How about you?
I think we're on the same list then.
Same page, same wiki, same time, same bat channel, same bat show, same bat time. Wait, that was used. Parting words of wisdom tonight? You don't have any.
Oh, man.
Caught him with his shorts down. We
May
are
the force
done.
Be with you.
All right, then let's just give them the contact information one more time. Listener line 206-222-CHAT. That's 2428. Like Mr. Bruce Barr did, you might get a surprise technology in your ear. Thank you for choosing the work slate. Or Chuck at ChuckChat.com. Email Craig at KeyboardMonkey@gmail.com. The website is always www.chuckchat.com. Skype me at chuck.tomasi, T-O-M-A-S-I, and various other ways that you can find on the website by clicking on Contact Me. And we will give our parting... We don't have any words of wisdom. Make something up. Always F disk before you partition or something. Never RM star dot star RMR dash RF slash. Only the geeks get those. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening. We gotta go. I love the Pac-Man sound, so here it comes. Okay, it's over now.